All right, so here's the situation. I'm sitting here with Mitchell von Weinkarde, and I was saying your name kind of weird, but that's okay.
That's fine. It's Dutch. It's always weird.
Okay. So we actually work together a lot, but lately we've been working on completely different projects. And there has been a Dev Discussions podcast about event sourcing, and I was really into the ideas that CQRS and event sourcing brought along, and I know that you were into it too, right?
Yeah, it's like I believe that it was like a year and a half ago when we first when the subject actually surfaced. We saw a lightning talk about it in Groningen, I believe it was.
About CQRS.
Yeah, but also about event sourcing, just a little bit.
Yeah, that was Warner.
Yeah, I think it was actually.
I don't know his last name.
Me neither.
Yeah, he's like a symphony dude who does a lot of stuff with symphony and CQRS. Yeah. And I think he recently moved to the Netherlands, but I guess that's beside the point.
Yeah, he did. But after that, that ignited my event sourcing passion. And I started looking into it, and So that's been a year and a half now, and we finally both have a project in production, or almost in production, right?
Event sourcing. Your project has been in production for like 5 months, 6 months,
a couple months now, yeah.
And mine is close to hitting production, but it's pretty mature as far as how everything's being implemented. I've gotten far enough in the implementation to have a good idea of how it's all working out and everything like that. So I guess the goal here is to talk about how we implemented it. And then I would like to meet up with you again in another number of months, mm-hmm, to kind of follow up to this conversation and get our opinions and ideas about how things have changed, the experiences we've had maintaining these applications and the like.
Yeah, sounds good. So my first question is, did you actually start with event storming? Because I remember we also did a workshop on it, and with my project, as we actually started, we did two event storming sessions, mm-hmm, a couple hours each, and that actually gave me like the basis of my all of my events that I'm using right now in production. So right. Did you do the same?
My partner and I actually did start with a type of event storming, but then we kind of realized that we don't exactly know this domain incredibly thoroughly, because we don't have like domain experts. We are essentially the domain experts here. So, and we're evolving the domain as we go. So in our specific case, and just really quick for anybody who is listening, the event storming process is where you stand up with a bunch of post-it notes and you actually say, these are events that we care about. So in the context of my application, which is like an online testing platform where people are given questions and they have to answer them and that kind of thing, I might have events on the wall on a post-it note that say something like, subject has begun test, or something like that. That's just off the top of my head, right? And so you kind of brainstorm all of these events and then organize them and see what invariants you're guarding against and all of this. But while we have used this technique to do discovery in a lot of projects so far, and in this one, we kind of have been just making up the domain as we went. So I wouldn't say in any way that what I do ever is according to popular opinion of what should be done necessarily, mm-hmm, but I'm here to be real about what I'm doing. So
for me, like we weren't the actual the domain experts at the time. I was working for a client at the time together with Nick, and we both kind of led the event storming sessions, and it was with every event storming session, it was actually the first one we did with an actual client other than just trying it out with just ourselves, and it went quite well. Like the first 15 to 20 minutes or something were kind of awkward because the client like had no idea what he had to do. He had the post-it in his hand and a pen, and he was like, so what now? Mm-hmm. So we guided him with a very simple first events, like client was registered, and like the most simplest thing you can think of. And then what we did is we kind of like went in very global, and then you know, like it's just kind of like normal. So we went kind of global. So the overall things, the overall things of all the different aggregates and all the different events that we can think of, and then we went in for more fine grain events. And the project I'm talking about is a widget platform where people can quickly create widgets for sport widgets actually, and then put on their website. So one of the events was is that in the actual widget creation, because that there's an entire creation process in there. It's a couple forms. One of the actual events was widget was finished. It's a very simple one, but that actually determines that okay, the widget has been established right now. This is like all of that data is fixed now, and it cannot actually change. It's possible to use it in production right now. So yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So I should say that right now I'm building all of this. Does it even matter that what platform and stuff we're building this on? So I'm building this in PHP and I'm using the Laravel framework for essentially routing.
Yeah. For me personally, I also use Laravel. The version doesn't even matter, I suppose. It's the latest version. And for me, we're using the routing, a couple other things as well, because we didn't want to spend as much time, because I know you wrote your own dispatcher, you wrote your own basically everything. We went kind of the entire Laravel way, because just to keep things simple, yeah, and to absolutely. Not spend time on it. We used the event dispatcher for broadcasting as well, to broadcast over, I don't know which what it actually was. It might be Pusher or something, I don't remember. And we use the queuing. There are a couple other things, but we use like a lot of the Laravel stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So you queuing. I actually use Active Record for view models, which yeah. I'll talk about a little bit later. Which is Laravel's Eloquent and a number of other things. So I wanted to use Laravel because not only do I know it quite well, but I think for as far as getting down to the business of implementing stuff, as far as getting down to making things happen, I think that there's basically not a faster way. That's my opinion in the current state of things. So what I wanted is Laravel to implement things that like managing the web requests, managing the responses, the command line tool, the active record for the database interactions for the view models and stuff like that. And I could have those like out of the box running basically immediately. But then I have a very strong distinction, a very strong line between where the framework takes the request in and starts handling that, and when basically that information is handed into the rest of my application. There's a very strong line there. And on one side of that line, basically, I'm not doing any testing. I'm not doing any testing end to end at all. I'm going to add that in, but more of a later thing. Because right now I need to be working with this application to see how better to implement the application, change the application, work with it, etc. And there's only two of us on the project, and I'm the only one doing any back end. And so there is not really the time for me to do the whole BDD process, figuring out everything kind of as I go is not necessarily a great fit. So in a lot of the back-end pieces, I'm going with TDD. So my domain event dispatcher, everything that I can understand basically fully when I start to code it. And then there are some pieces that I kind of spiked and then went back and did all the testing for. But there's nothing that's not unit tested on the side of my application that's not the framework in the web.
Yeah, for me it's a little bit different because you know this is your like you're kind of making a startup
right. This is for me. It's an application for me. I'm the client.
Exactly, and like for me like I had to do some client work. So like there was a budget and we had to make compromises. So not the entire system. Like I have the same setup as you though. Like I have a very strict line. A request comes in, and then you know a command is fired, and then the actual domain takes it over. Like that part of the system. But as far as testing goes, there are only a couple components that have been fully tested, and so then you cannot even name it fully tested, I suppose. But It's not the entire system. So some of it has been spiked and not been refactored yet. It's just like, and this is with any project. At some point, I believe that getting it shipped is more important than actually getting it right.
It's a startup, right?
It is a start. Yeah, it is a startup. So, you know, they don't have like an insane amount of money.
And we're not the kind of people who are dogmatic about how things necessarily have to be. I've already kind of apologized for the way that I'm going to explain how I implemented things, because I believe that it's very important to have control over where you put the quality of your application. I was talking to Ross Tuck today, and we were talking about how quality is a resource and you burn it up. And the more you spend of the quality on this component, the less you can spend on that component for the same budget.
Yeah.
So if you're operating within a budget, you have to make a decision. And I made my decisions based on the fact that there was going to be me maintaining this app for the foreseeable future. And I also have to do other things. I have other work that needs to be done. I cannot be maintaining this app into perpetuity. What I need is I need some ability to be confident in the system that it's all working without having to manually test a bunch of stuff, without things ever, you know, going wrong if possible. So that I don't have to come back into it and fix it. I can only add features when necessary and maintain it as little as possible. And so that's why I'm investing heavily in testing up front. But this, I guess this is just a side thing where I believe that a lot of people who on Twitter would not like a lot of the things that maybe you and I are going to say. But I think they're closer to reality than a lot of people would like to admit.
Yeah, and I'm also like the only backender actually working on this project for also the foreseeable future. So I can make some decisions and I can leave some like quote unquote hacks in there just because I know all of them. I know the entire system. So to me, it's fine right now. If someone were to actually take over the project, I would probably like
cry.
Mostly cry, yeah. No, but I would either make like a migration document or ask for a possible budget to like fix those things up then hand over the project. So that's what I would personally do. So to actually get back into the event sourcing, because we've been kind of getting distracted for the last couple minutes. For me, the first decision that I had to make was, do I go with Broadway, which is one of the most well-known event sourcing packages in PHP,
right?
Or do I make my own things? And I specifically for event sourcing, it also was my first one my first event sourcing project that I was going to put in production. I really wanted to know how it worked internally, so I decided to go for my own. After the fact, I still would have done that. I still would have written my own. I'm actually rewriting my own right now because I found some improvements. I've talked to you in the last couple of weeks.
I think it's interesting that when you write your own, you end up coming against the problems that other people have already solved. So Broadway probably has some solutions in there just built into the way it works that solved the problems that you came against. But because you wrote it yourself, you are now truly kind of understand those problems, whereas you might not have come up against them with Broadway. So I think it's an interesting divide. You know, when you invest in that doing it yourself, you I think do walk away with a little bit more wisdom, but of course it comes at a cost, right?
Yeah, it does. Like it required about a couple hours, like maybe like 4, 5, 6 hours or something for me to, especially in the beginning. No, it probably was even more, like a couple 10 hours, like 10 hours or something for me to have that library ready. Although it's very simple, I had no idea what I was doing, and I was also using Greg Young's Event Store at the time.
Yeah,
and actually switched to just using a MySQL database as an event store just because it was hella simpler, actually.
Right. I started looking into Greg Young's Event Store, and while I think it's very interesting, I also had a few problems with it, some technical problems, and I didn't want to spend a lot more time troubleshooting it. So I probably spent like 4 or 5 hours on learning how to work with it, and then building a virtual machine provisioner for it and all this stuff. But then it just felt like I'm spending all this time. Why exactly? Maybe I'll just throw all of my events into a relational database and if I have problems, I'll just scale out because it doesn't matter. I can migrate my events to something else. So do you think, okay, really quick, I feel compelled to have a brief description of event sourcing. So maybe instead of that, I'm going to say, we had another dev discussions on event sourcing, and instead of filling this up with redundant content, maybe check that one out if some of what we're saying is kind of weird and you don't get some of the jargon references. At the same time, let's try to kind of be conscious of what we're saying and give some a little bit of explanation.
Okay.
So where do you want to start? So I think it's what's interesting, what I want to do is talk about how we actually implemented this stuff. Okay. Kind of peel away some of the theory and look at application, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think is a good place to start?
At the actual, maybe at the event store, like how things are stored or...
For me, we have the web component, which is where the request comes in and then goes into the system and then how all that's processed from that way. Or we have the read side. We can start from the read side and kind of work back or... it may be easiest for anyone who's a web developer to think about this from the request side.
Yeah, sure. That's fine with me as well.
So I'm assuming that your request hits your machine.
Yeah.
You get routed to a controller.
Exactly.
And then magic happens.
Yeah, a lot of magic, you know, because it's PHP. No. It hits a controller. What it does then is how I set up this project is I'm using, it's not a server-side web app. My event source project is just an API, and I have a JavaScript application that actually talks to that API.
So it's a full client-side application.
Exactly. So what I do is I just send a request to one route, and I named it Mailbox. I kind of stole this from Matthias Varas, because he explained this to us in his workshop, that he has one endpoint. And he sends all his commands to that thing, and then those commands are just sent in through the system and picked up by the handlers, right? Just like a normal command bus, but instead of having multiple endpoints, like register for registering your member.
It's not REST, it's something different.
Yeah, exactly. For writing, it's so, like, you can still have REST, but then also, but then just for reading.
Okay.
What I'm doing right now is I want to just simplify everything. I didn't want to have multiple routes or whatever, or multiple endpoints. I just want to have one endpoint that I can post to. How that object looks, it's literally just two keys in the JSON object. It's command and payload, and payload has the actual payload, obviously, and then command has the command name that is picked up by the API.
All right, so this is really the first time you and I have had this conversation about how our stuff works, so I don't know your application.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I'm going to ask a few clarifying questions for myself.
Sure.
So what you're saying is, when something happens in your application that needs to have some kind of server-side effect, you're actually triggering a command from that's being designed and formulated in your client-side JavaScript, and then it's just being sent into the server side, and the server side just gets a command and then executes that.
Yes.
And then for reads, you have something that's more akin to like a REST setup.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. So at the moment, what I've done since, like, it's very simple. It has one controller. It's the Mailbox controller, very nice, very cleverly named. And that has literally a switch case that maps. It's very ugly, I know, but you know what the hell. It has a switch case that takes the that looks at the command name that came in from the post request, and it maps it to a command, and then it initializes that command and passes it into the command bus, and magic happens.
Okay, so really quick, I'm just going to mention that we have another Dev Discussions podcast about command bus. So if you're wondering what we're talking about, it's in that. Essentially, it's an object that exists with the name of a specific command that needs to be run against the system with the necessary fields for the data to execute that command.
I like the self-promotion 101. Here you have different other podcasts that you can listen to.
I just don't want to get too much into
it. I get it. Yeah. So what happens next? I'm just going to go through the code, actually. I have the project right in front of me.
So your controller receives it, and then you have like this one centralized location where you then instantiate the command object and throw it into the bus.
Exactly.
The bus will then pair that command to a handler, and then the handler is responsible for actually interacting with the domain and making everything happen from there.
Yeah, so,
so it's very one-directional. There's nothing coming back out of the command bus.
No. The only thing that my server side or my JavaScript side application actually knows is, did it go out correctly? Like, do I get back a 200 okay? Or do I get back a 500 error?
Right.
And then just something like what I do have is, I do have very descriptive error names, because if something wrong happens, I catch the actual correct exception, and I have a shit ton of exceptions, like a buttload of good named exceptions of whatever's happening. I can just catch those and send them back to the actual client, and then display the correct error message.
Okay.
So what a normal, like a general handler for me looks like, command handler, is I'm just gonna go through the code right now. Sorry for the hold up. Where is it?
Now, a command handler is an object that has the necessary dependencies to actually execute what you're trying to do. It's going to interact with domain objects and then handle whatever persistence needs you have.
Yeah, exactly. So what I have is I have the event store, and that is literally all I need actually at the moment. What I'm doing is I am just getting back the stream ID or the actual aggregate ID to get back all of the events, to get all of the events back from the event store, and then replay them on the right aggregate. I then call a method on that aggregate, and I get back the events, and then I dispatch those events as well.
Okay, so you have an event store, you query it for the events for a specific aggregate.
Yeah.
And then once you have those events, you can say, I want to build a new an instance of this aggregate from these events.
Yes.
So each event will then be kind of processed inside of that aggregate, and the state of the aggregate itself, of the object, will be updated with every new event until the state is back to the current state.
Yeah. This is like the general gist of it, yeah. Like, the one thing I don't like about my current code is that I actually have the event store and the event dispatching separately. And so we were talking about this last week, I believe. And what I'm going to do, and this is how Broadway, I believe, does it as well, is you can create a repository, an aggregate repository, and in that aggregate repository, you'll inject the event store and the event dispatcher. So if the events are persisted, if the events have been persisted to the database, to the event store, you can then automatically also dispatch them through your event dispatcher.
Okay.
Because this is all very manual right now, and it's just like a lot of redundant code. It's not nice. It's very simple, and again, I'm the only one on the project, so it's fine. I can just copy the code, and I'll refactor when I get to it. But it's one of those things that still have to be done.
Okay, so I'm doing a lot of very similar stuff, except for I don't have a client-side application. I have a server-side application, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And so what I'm doing is I actually have like a traditional routing configuration and a bunch of controllers. And let's say I need to do something like register a new subject to take a test. I would actually have some kind of post request that would actually have the relevant information for registering that subject. I would route that to a controller. And then in that controller, I would instantiate a new command object from the information that's in the request. That command then gets passed into the command bus, is paired to a command handler. In the handler, for example, for the registering of a subject for a test, I would inject an aggregate repository. Now, this aggregate repository is the same aggregate repository used for all aggregates. So whether I'm talking about test subjects or tests themselves, or test designers, or test anything.
Administrators,
any kind of aggregate itself, they're all going to use the same repository. And I kind of came to that conclusion because I started implementing individual repositories like I would without CQRS, without event sourcing. And I found I had a very redundant set of needs. So what I did is, if I want to retrieve an aggregate from an event store, like from a repository, I just say repository retrieve, and then I use the PHP 5.5 class constant.
Yeah, 5.5, yeah.
Yeah, I use the class constant to say, well, this is the kind of aggregate I want back, and then The second argument is the ID for that aggregate. So I get the ID from the command, and that will go and it will search the event store for all of the events for that aggregate that match the ID. And then it will just pass them into the whatever I named the playback static method on that aggregate, which will then essentially fold over every one of those domain events, reconstitute the state of the aggregate, and then return it.
I named that method built from, by the way.
Okay.
Just so you have like widget built from events.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's like the sentence or something. For some reason, I always tend to go with more sentence-like naming.
I went with playback.
Playback, okay, yeah. It's
because I mean, like you've heard me in this conversation, I just say playback because that's how I think of it.
Yeah.
So I just roll with that.
Yeah.
But each of my aggregates, for example, let's talk about a test subject.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have them subclassing an abstract class called aggregate. And this abstract class, it provides all of the functionality of the aggregate. It actually does quite a few things. Originally, I kind of had this pulled apart into multiple traits.
Yeah.
But I felt like this is actually quite sufficient for me, for my purposes, and I don't really see this changing. So the things that my aggregate superclass can handle for me so that every single one of my aggregates has the exact same functionality is it raises events. So if I want to rename a test subject, I can just call the rename method on the subject aggregate, give it a new name, and that rename method only contains any invariance that must be guarded. So any rules, validations on that name. So maybe a name may not be... Well, first of all, I use names as value objects. Okay.
Yeah.
So the names are already validated by the value objects.
When you actually instantiate the value object.
So when I instantiate a full name object, I have to put in a first name and a last name, and those can't be empty strings.
That's
and
it.
Then I inject that into the rename, for example. Now, if here in the rename method I had to guard an invariant, I had to have some kind of if conditional that checked something to make sure that I wasn't renaming invalid, to make sure that once it got past this point, it's okay, guaranteed, then I would do that there.
Well, one of the things you can actually do there is you can check if both names are the same then or whatever.
That's true.
And then just you can do this in any system, by the way. But like you can encapsulate that logic in that rename method that if both names are the same or if the supposedly new name is the same as the old one, then you can just throw an exception.
If that's something you want to check for, care about.
Yeah, sure, exactly.
Kind of
yeah.
Exactly. That's a good example that ties into this whole rename example. So after that, I raise a new event by calling this raise. Now the raise method is actually part of that abstract aggregate class. It's not part of my test subject object, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I raise the domain event, I call this raise, and then I instantiate a new instance of subject was renamed. And inside that subject was renamed event, I keep the subject ID and the new name. No other information.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, my raise method then calls apply on the same object. And all apply does is it does some PHP magic.
And have you defined this apply method in the
Aggregate, in the abstract class.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
So apply is part of my abstract class.
Okay.
So this is fun because what I do is I look at the name of the event class, and I know a lot of people who would do event sourcing do not want their events to be tied to class names.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that. I'm sorry. This is the way I'm doing it. I'm saying subject maybe was renamed, or this is maybe a bad example because there's reasons for subjects being renamed that may or may not have domain relevancy. Anyway, subject was renamed, and it's going to say, is there a method on this aggregate called apply subject was renamed, and it actually checks that. Then, you know, if there's not, it'll throw an exception saying I could not apply this event, and that way I know every time an event is raised that it's going to apply it correctly, because it's going to throw an exception immediately if it tries to apply it and it doesn't exist. Now this is fun because if it does find that a method apply subject was renamed, it's just going to call that method and pass in the event. And so my actual test subject aggregate ends up having two methods for every action. One method exists to guard invariants, to basically do request validation of sorts, not requests like HTTP requests, but on the idea of renaming a subject if there's some validation necessary.
Just the business rules.
And then it raises the event. So it's business rules, raising event, and that's all it does. Then right below it, there's an apply method that type hints that exact event. And then it tells it to, okay, if we change this name to the event's name value. And so there's two methods that go together every time. One is for raising events, and one's for applying them. And it's kind of done with magic methods in the background so that I always have just these coupled methods the whole time.
So let me get this straight. You get back an array of events, or is it actually a value object of events?
I have a specific type of collection called domain events
that
will not allow any other type of item other than a domain event implementation.
Okay. Then you call the playback method. You pass this collection to it. It loops through.
It's apply method, for the record. To me, playback is my static factory method for building the aggregate out of a domain events from scratch.
Okay. And maybe I just misunderstood this, is that if the actual apply event doesn't or the apply method doesn't exist on the aggregate, it just throws an exception?
Yep.
But what, my initial question is, or my initial thought is, what if, like, you kind of phased out that event, let's say your project has been around for a couple of years or whatever, and this is an event from back in the old days, mm-hmm. and you're not using it anymore, what happens then?
That's a good question, and that can happen, but it hasn't happened. So this is how my system works now.
Sure.
So if I get to the point where I'm going to get back these events that I no longer care about, this aggregate no longer cares about, and I don't want to have that code inside my aggregate, I could do a few things. I could have an empty method, which maybe is not the best thing, mm-hmm. or I could not throw the exception. I mean, there's a number of ways to solve this, and I can't know right now how I would go about doing that because I'm not living it.
Yeah. So are you using reflection, by the way, to get back if everything is, if the event or the, if the apply event method is not on the actual aggregate?
So just method exists.
Okay, just method exists. Okay. That is, yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. For me, I actually have the same, all my aggregates extend the aggregate class as well. That's like it. It's a damn awful word, by the way.
What, aggregate?
Aggregate.
I don't like
aggregate.
Yeah. An aggregate is just an object that is the source of, it's the place where all of the rules having to do with this concept and any concepts that are children of it, I don't know, it's like the gateway of business rules, right? So if you can't put something, it's like the bounce over club. If you try to put in something that's not valid, it's going to be rejected at the aggregates level.
And this bouncer of the club, it knows of everything of in the entire club, right? So it knows if you're allowed to do X or whatever, and it controls everything as well. So it might not be the actual bouncer of the club, because the bouncer generally doesn't know how to maybe take care of the entire business in there, but you can kind of figure out or whatever. So my aggregate abstract class, it does a couple things as well. It basically does the same thing. It has it actually just records the event, and it has the current version of the events, right? So if you record one event, that is version one. If you record the second event, that's version two. The next event is version 3, and you need this to get back the events in the correct order from the event store.
Can you say a little bit about version? Because you're saying event versions.
Yeah, so what a version is, if you're used to Broadway's mm-hmm. Way of naming, or if you're used to Broadway, then it's exactly the same as the playhead. I actually have named it playhead because I just... I don't know. I just named it playhead for some reason. I didn't really think about it.
But it's not an event version.
It's not the event version. It's like the number in line or whatever.
It's the version of the aggregate.
Yeah.
So the idea is...
That's correct. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
If you play back 50 events on an aggregate, every single time one is applied to the state of that aggregate, the event is incremented by one.
Yeah.
And so that way you know how many events have been applied so far. But best of all, you know that if you retrieve back an event that says that it's supposed to be applied to this version of the aggregate, and then you try to apply that event, but there's a version mismatch. The aggregate's on version 55, and you're trying to apply the event that thinks it should apply to 50,
yeah.
Then you know there's a problem, and the state can get totally messed up.
Yeah, and you can just throw an exception or whatever, and then everything is good and golden. So I have a just because I wanted to be able to get the ID from all of the aggregates, and I wanted to like streamline this. I have an abstract public function that is get ID. It's not necessary. It's just one of the things that I wanted to get in there, and it just returns an aggregate identity class, which is the value object that holds a UUID.
I have the exact same thing. An abstract public function is called ID.
Yeah. I remember you started using a step away from the getters and setters, or especially getters.
Yeah, it's not just getters and setters, because getters and setters like gives you this CRUD feeling. Yeah,
but especially with getters.
Yeah, like, but not just getters, but just the concept of the word get. Because I've been really thinking about objects and how objects are, you store them in memory, then you send them a message, and the message is the method that you want to call, and then the parameters of that method, or the arguments. And I've been really thinking that telling a test subject that it needs to get ID doesn't make sense to me, but also I don't like how it reads when I'm actually coding. So I have actually dropped the get prefix for, I don't know, what, 8 months or more? And I'm really super happy with it. I don't want to go back to using get as the prefix. But, I mean, to each their own. It's just this is not popular in the world of PHP.
Oh, yeah. I started to play with it last week or 2 weeks ago. And I don't have an opinion on it yet. I like it. It makes things easier to read, actually, instead of get ID. Like
That's really
like
jarring, isn't it?
It's the subtle little things.
Like, if subject get ID is something versus if subject ID is something.
It reads better. It's weird. It's like a subtle thing, but it reads a little bit better.
Yeah. It makes my brain hurt less. Honestly, genuinely, like when I'm now that I'm used to this, when I look at other PHP code or maybe code that I wrote in the past, I find it actually more difficult, like requiring more cognitive overhead to parse it.
Yeah, that actually makes sense. Yeah. We were to aggregate base class. Yeah. Or the abstract class.
You have an abstract function ID that's always going to return an instance of aggregate ID.
Always, yes, always.
And do you have a different aggregate ID class for every aggregate?
I used to. I used to do that, and I still have, but they're actually all the same. So, and the reason that I didn't, like, the reason that I went for this decision is because I was using Greg Young's event store in the beginning, and I wanted to use categorization. So what you had to do then is if you have your UUID, you would actually prefix it with a string and what is it, a dash or something?
Yeah, strip, yeah.
Strip, exactly. So what if you had like a member aggregate or whatever, you would have like member dash then the UUID. And that's why I needed the separate classes, the separate value objects for those identity classes, right? But I'm not using Greg Young's event store anymore, and I didn't really see the point of doing that as well because it's just not necessary at the moment for me.
Yeah.
So I am going to switch back to just one aggregate identity class.
I have a bit of a different opinion on this. For me, a big thing that I want is I like being able to express correctness through types. I like that when I have a type called subject ID, it differs from a type of designer ID. So maybe I have a test designer and they have a designer ID, and maybe I have a test subject and they have a subject ID. If I want to compare the two, if I want to say, is this ID the same as that ID? Because they're just variables at this point, they're just objects. And they were the same type, I wouldn't be able to differentiate if they were the same thing or not. Yeah. If they were maybe just had the same underlying text string that differentiated, you know, maybe wasn't enough to differentiate them. But if I create a new instance, if I say I want to register this subject, I want to be able to pass in a subject ID as one of the arguments and a name as one of the arguments, and these are not scalars for me. These are actual objects with actual types. I don't want to use scalars for the most part, and I think some of this comes from the time I've spent in Scala and the like, where I started seeing that if I kind of assert, I can assert some amount of logic or some amount of how things are grouped and the nature of things through the types themselves, and then I don't have to do as much checking and whatnot in the code. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I'm just assuming that everything is correct at the moment for the IDs. I'm actually typing the correct ID class right now, but Yeah, it's...
It's kind of like a static versus dynamic kind of situation. Types versus not types.
It sort of is, yeah.
I think everybody's going to have different feelings on this, but when it comes to my domain, I feel like it's really kind of a good time to implement types, but at the same time, other people would disagree. For example, Ruby developers, they have all these extra unit tests to just measure that the structure and the form
is correct.
Yeah. And I don't have to do that. I just have to test on
the actual behavior.
Fewer factors, right? Yeah. And so if I can get away with not having to test on a bunch of other stuff and also get the what I feel is additional clarity at the cost of creating new classes, and my IDs are subclasses of the aggregate ID abstract class. So the aggregate ID abstract class actually implements all of the behavior already because the behavior is identical between all of them. So essentially, I have a bunch of classes that are fundamentally empty that only exist to differentiate themselves by type.
So one of the issues that I can actually, that I was thinking of right now is, let's say that I get, so with my members and my widgets, for instance, if I were to accidentally put in a widget ID in the members, what it would do with my system, because it doesn't actually throw an exception on the if the aggregate doesn't know the event like event apply method thing, mm-hmm. How would that does it your place? So it puts in the actual widget ID in the member. What it would do then is it would get back all of the widget ID or all of the widget events. It would try to play back those events on the actual member class.
And silently fail.
It wouldn't fail. It would just instantiate it like a nothing at the moment that I think about it. I don't actually have any guards for this I don't actually have any rules for me to protect against this. So what it would actually do is in my current system is it would instantiate an empty member class.
An inconsistent class.
It would actually kind of be an inconsistent class.
Because it wouldn't have an ID. It wouldn't have any of that. It would be
it would instantiate it like an inconsistent class, and it would try to actually record that event, and it would succeed obviously because the actual class is instantiated, but it's incorrect, and then it would store the actual event on the wrong stream, and then you would
interesting point, because let's say I had a test subject and it applied a bunch of events that were not for it. So it silently failed and returned an empty test subject. And then I said rename, and it threw a new rename event. And then I stored it. That means the next time that widget, for example, would be loaded, it would get a subject was renamed event, mm-hmm. and it also silently fail. And essentially your event stream, over the course of time before you identify that you had a bug, would fill up with a bunch of invalid events. And that's why I like really fatal errors. That's why I like things that just to slam close and say no. I'd rather have every user in the world see a big fatal error than allow it to continue to corrupt the state of the system.
Yeah.
Of course, different applications and different things have different business needs in this context. But I guess moving on. So that kind of explains how we build the. Do you have anything else going on in your aggregate?
Yes, I have one thing. I have the apply event method. That's a protected function class. I couldn't do private nor public because I didn't want to call it publicly on whatever. And what that is defined on the aggregate. The actual member aggregate, for instance, it is a big switch statement at the moment that I'm using the PHP5 class static thingy
class constant.
Class constant, exactly. And then I just get back the if it finds the correct event and then it calls the apply method and then it applies the event. So I'm using a lot of switch statements here and there.
Yeah.
I used to hate on switch statements, but then now I'm like, well, you know, it's easy and it works right now. And
to me, switch statements are kind of magical because they are my go-to method for when I don't want to design something using better design. So if I want to say, okay, I need something working now, and I don't really want to architect something because I'm not sure how it's going to end up looking. I can use a switch statement, put all of the logic there, and later, after I gain some experience, decide on how to better design this, and then I migrate away from the switch.
You've already separated the logic, so that's like the first step of for your future work, right?
Yeah.
So that is my base aggregate class. It's very simple. It doesn't do a lot of things. Just the only state it has is just the events, the recorded events, uh-huh. and the aggregate version.
Yeah, and I guess all the that stuff really exists for is one, to take a bunch of domain events and instantiate an instance of that class with the state from the domain events applied.
Yes.
Or it also allows you to query from that aggregate and say, what events have been raised on this aggregate? So I may play back a test subject, and it may have 20 events applied to it, which is it's a lot, but it's not outside the realm of reason for this context. And then I say, then I call a method on it, and I say rename, for example, and that raises a new event. So what happens then is I can actually ask that test subject aggregate, give me all the new events, and it'll give them to me. And that's how I can take those events out and store them. So that aggregate repository I was saying, that where I get the built version of the aggregate back, I can call whatever methods against this test subject that I need to in order to solve for the command, in order to meet the requirements of the command. And then I just throw that aggregate back into the aggregate repository and say, store this. And what it's going to do then is it's going to pull out all of those events. It's going to record them in the event store. And then it's going to blast them out to the event dispatcher.
Yeah.
And the event dispatcher is already preloaded with a bunch of listeners. So this is the way I'm doing it now.
And you're talking about in-memory listeners, right?
Yeah, they're in-memory.
Yeah, okay.
So the way I have it now, and this is kind of how I always start listeners, and only when things get kind of heavy or things change, mm-hmm. do I really take it to a more abstract level. I start with having a service provider in the event sourcing module. So the way I build my applications is I have a source folder because I use the PSR4 auto-loading standard, and the source matches up to the namespace of the application. Right now, I'll just call it like my app or something like that. And then the next level of namespacing are modules. And each of these modules provides something to my application. So I have a module called command dispatch. And inside it has my command bus interface, my command execution command bus concretion, my mapper that allows me to map commands to handlers, and then a service provider that gets loaded when PHP, when my framework kind of boots up. And that tells my framework's container how to return a fully constructed instance of my command bus.
So would you say that it's possible for you to actually pull out one of those modules and then your system would still work? Just for, you know...
So actually some of the modules are dependent upon others.
Yeah.
So for example, I have an event sourcing module that has... Actually right here, I have it right here. It has a lot of stuff. Things like aggregate base class, aggregate ID base class, aggregate repository... interface, domain event stuff, the service provider to bootstrap all of the event sourcing stuff, and it has probably like 8 to 10 exceptions that are very clearly named exceptions, like cannot compare different aggregate IDs is one of my exceptions. I don't know how to deserialize domain event. This domain event is another exception. I don't know how to serialize this domain event is another exception, because every time I tried to come up with an exception for those, it sounded really robotic and unnatural, and I kind of felt like if I saw this exception and it said, I don't know how to serialize this domain event.
You literally have I in there?
Yes.
Okay, that's cool.
And then that's it fun. Says in the, you know how you can pass an additional set of a string to add additional details to the exception? In there, it automatically says the name of the event. So I don't know how to deserialize the domain event test subject has it registered.
Okay.
Is kind of how it plays out. So to me, that's easy for me to understand. And of course, it has, I also have the domain event dispatcher and listener interfaces, implementations, and all that stuff inside that module.
Yeah. So, okay. So, like you were talking about actually persisting those, having those events that they were retrieved from the aggregate, and then passed along to the event store and then to the event dispatcher. I want to talk about the serialization part because for me it's kind of scattered.
The event store stuff.
Yeah. The event serialization.
When you say serialization, you mean the process of taking the actual event object and putting it into a database storable form.
Yes.
And then pulling it back from, once it gets pulled back from the database, taking it from that that row, database row form into an actual domain event.
Exactly. So I'm quickly gonna go through how I did it. And like I said, it's kind of like scatter throughout a place.
Oh, so it's, okay.
I have an event interface that said, that has a couple methods, get stream ID, get version, and then get data. And I use this get data, which returns an array of all of the data from that event, right?
Uh-huh.
So what happens is, let's say I have a collection, like an events collection that is passed to my event store class. What it does there, it loops through it. It calls the get data method on all of the events. It gets back the array. It makes one big array, and then it calls JSON encode or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then that is literally my serialization of my events.
Okay, so when you say it's all over the place, what you're saying is every single event knows how to turn itself into an array. Well, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. And like the actual responsibility of serialization is in my event store, which I don't really like.
What do you mean by responsibility of serialization? Calling the get data method on the event?
Yeah, and then turning it into like a storable format. I kind of want to put that in like its own thing. So the actual event store, like, it doesn't really need to know what format it is in, because maybe I want to change the format. And what if I want to change the format? Well, then I have to change my event store, which is all fine.
Does that
fine
mean you
dandy.
Need an event store? I need a new implementation of the event store interface?
At the moment, my event store is just literally a class. I don't even have an event store interface.
So I have an event store interface, and then my my event store implementation is actually called relational event store because I'm using the Laravel database driver to do persistence and querying. And the Laravel database system supports many relational database systems, not just MySQL or Postgres. Yeah. So I just went with relational because
it's a fun name. Yeah. And like naming a database event store is kind of like, you know, I wouldn't say dumb, but it's kind of weird because everything is database. Like you're going to store it in a database. Well, what kind of database, right? So then relational, whatever, makes kind of makes sense.
I guess I could have called it like Laravel.
Like Illuminate Query Builder Event Store, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
That's very much possible. I personally want to do that, but you might, because you could also have a PDO event store, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can do.
I thought about doing that, but I was like, look, I'm built on top of Laravel, and it's actually Laravel to me is this tool that solves a bunch of problems I don't want to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have no interest in solving the web routing problems. I have no interest in any of that stuff. So that's why I use a framework. It's because I want these problems to be solved for me. And really, I don't really care how any of this stuff is implemented. I just want it to be easy to implement and, you know, easy to throw away and swap out or whatever. And Laravel to me has the easiest implementation that's imaginable. So literally, I'm using this like DB facade.
Yeah.
And when I query for an aggregate, I say a DB table event store, and then where aggregate ID is this, order by aggregate version, and then I get the results and just spit it back out. And it's one line. It's absolutely untestable.
Yeah, I was about to ask, like, so you haven't tested it yet?
No. There are some things I haven't tested, and it's everywhere that the framework is doing this stuff for me.
Yeah.
And so mostly it's at this level. So in the end, I'm going to have end-to-end tests that will cover all of my use cases. I'm very familiar with that process. You know, we've done it before. But right now, I don't have that. And so I'm just saying, during this period, during this process, I will be able to see if there's a problem, and I don't have to worry too much about it. One reason I test so thoroughly in the application stuff that I own, that I wrote, that is deeper, that's domain-oriented, and et cetera, is that I'm going to keep changing that. I'm going to keep working with it. And I don't want to have to pay these dues later of having weird stuff happening that I can't track down. I have to spend 2 hours of my life on something stupid that I could have avoided over and over again, multiple times. Because there's never a time when you're like, I've done this a million times. I fix some problem, some weird complex situation happens. I have to decode the complex situation. Then I'm like, oh, I get it now. And I fix it. Then 3 months later, the same damn thing comes up. I don't remember exactly I have to decode the situation again and fix it. And that's what I'm working to avoid by doing all of this testing.
Yeah.
But where things hit the database, there's no semblance. There's no pretense of testing. I literally just don't try. There's not even an is instantiable test.
Oh, nothing. Whatever.
No.
No.
So you were saying that your events are responsible for turning themselves into an associative array, which will then be persisted into the database.
Exactly.
As JSON.
Yes.
Into a single field in your event store table, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
But when you query these events out, how are they turned back into objects?
This is, again, switch statements, man.
But where? Where are
you switching? So, what I have is I have in my... Because I also have like an event sourcing module kind of thing. It's just like a namespace in the source folder of my project, right? So source, event sourcing, kind of fun. I have in there an event, like an event factory interface that has one method. It says make event, and that one is kind of like, it's kind of ugly. But again, I didn't really want to spend much time on this just because I didn't think, like, it wasn't the most important thing at the time. It still isn't really, but at the moment I've given, like, the project has been on for like a couple months, so, and I've given it some more thought and I have better ideas on how to solve those problems now. So it's a make event that that wants the stream ID, the event type, the version, and the actual payload, like the data. And from that, it can do anything, right?
So when you say stream ID, you're talking about the aggregate ID.
Yeah, sorry.
So that's another event sourcing terminology.
Yeah.
So the stream is all of the events for a single aggregate.
I just keep assuming that people, or that you know, just because we're talking.
Yeah, no, you're doing good.
Yeah. So for actually reconstituting the actual domain events, what I have is I have a switch statement, like I said, and this all of these classes and all of these things are in this one namespace event sourcing. So I have this again. I have this interface event factory, and I have a final class because I final all the things, literally all the things, switch event factory, and that in that make event it literally has a switch statement that I'm looking at it right now. It's about like 30, 40 events or something. So it's like
case. Hundreds and hundreds of lines.
Oh, yeah. No, it's actually 72 lines total with all of the brackets and everything. So it's
really?
Still, yeah, it's still.
Wow. How do you instantiate like that?
All just in one line.
Okay.
It's literally just like case and the event name and then return new. And what I have is I pass in a stream ID, I pass in the playhead, all of this is required in the actual event, right? Mm-hmm. And then I, in the constructor, pass in, for instance, for this member was registered event, I pass in the email, the full name, the password, and the account plan.
Okay.
So that is my reconstituting events thingy.
Okay, so there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, so how do you do it?
Yeah, I thought about this long and hard, and I came up with a solution I think maybe people will or won't like. It might be a divisive type solution.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it suits the way I think about the problem. So each of my modules, for example, I have an event sourcing module, and that has a service provider, one service provider per module. And the service provider for that one will actually create, tell the Laravel container how to build the domain event dispatcher. It'll tell it how to instantiate this class that I have called domain event serializer. Now, the domain event serializer is one of these meta classes. It basically takes a module's serializer. Each module in my system has its own serializer, and it holds it. So if I tell this domain event serializer to serialize the subject was renamed event, it's going to spin through, loop through each of the serializers and ask them, do you know how to handle this event? If it does know how to handle the event, it just passes it in and then returns the result directly. This is true for serialization and deserialization. So each module, for example, my testing module or my design module, these have one serializer that handles all of the events that are inside this module. So that can be quite a few events, actually. Now, the way that works is each of these individual serializers that are basically loaded like drivers into this great domain event serializer system.
Mm-hmm.
Each of these, I'm loading mine up here so I can look at it.
Yeah.
It extends a superclass that does a lot of the administration, so that I could provide this little kind of API for myself to interact with. And so basically, they all have one protected function called define. and it's an empty, it's just an empty hole. Now, what my job is to do is to write to call this method called handles over and over and over again for every event type. So the way that the language plays out is you call this handles, then the first argument is the name of the event. So in this case, it's a subject was renamed. So it says this handle subject was renamed. Mm-hmm. Then the next argument is an anonymous function that takes the domain event and returns a JSON encoded string of the contents of that event. The second argument is an anonymous function that takes three parameters, actually. The first one is the aggregate ID. The second is the aggregate version. And the third is the event's payload, which is actually a standard object. So what this is, the first anonymous function gets the actual domain event from the domain with the purpose of sending it into the database. So it returns the JSON encoded string because that's how I'm going to use it later. The second anonymous function is actually getting the database row back. And I'm sending in the event object as a standard class object, which is essentially an object version of associative array, mm-hmm. with keys and values only. No behavior.
Okay.
And I just use that to say return new, subject was renamed, and then subject ID, and then I constitute it using a static class factory method. I instantiate a new one using the ID from the database row, and then I give it the new name, which is a name object that I instantiate with the value from the event. So the first anonymous function takes a domain event and returns a JSON code string. The second one takes the data from the database and returns the domain event. So I can just call that handles method over and over again down the line. Mm-hmm. It's not that different from what you're doing,
no.
Which is providing a central location for these definitions. And if I ever have a problem with this, I can change it. But for now, I feel like if I want to know how to do this stuff, I can do it right here, and it's very easy. The API is simple, and I can understand it. And it keeps me from having to do like this thing where I create a new serializer for every event if I don't want the event to handle that itself.
Yeah.
I could definitely say make a from database or from serialized factory method on every event and tell it how to teach itself how to create a new instance from that.
Yeah.
But I'd really rather keep those events as like these standard objects that don't even subclass anything. They just implement an interface called domain event for type hinting. Right?
Yeah. And like the way you're doing it right now, you have a lot of flexibility for in the future. And this is my exact thought as well. I went for a switch statement because it's the easiest thing I could think of.
And you and I have talked a lot about switch statements as a place to throwaway code.
Exactly, yeah. It's literally just like, I need a temporary thing. I need like, I don't know, like just a temporary thing to fill in there for it to get working because I want to move on to the important stuff. One of the things I could do is use the decorator pattern. I could create a couple of event factories and then just, you know, instantiate one or inject them all in the constructor or whatever, just the normal decorator stuff. And then if it doesn't actually find it in the first one, I call the next one and the next one, mm-hmm. the next one. And then finally, if it finds it or not, it'll just return everything back or whatever. You know, that is like one of the things that you can do. You could also, like you said, you could have a like one class.
It's like a strategy pattern situation.
Yeah, like the speed dating thingy. You can have
by speed dating he means this pattern that we use that nobody else knows what we're talking about because we named it speed dating pattern. The point is, it's there's an object that has a behavior that only operates on certain contexts, like maybe certain classes, and then there's a method that says yes or no, true or false, on whether it responds to whatever. It's called can handles or something. So the idea is you can spin through these objects really quickly and find one that's compatible and return and then use that one.
It's
so,
literally the strategy pattern and the specification pattern combined.
Right.
That is literally it. So yeah, so that is the speed dating pattern. It's a funny name, actually. That's also possible, but then you would have to create a class for each event, and it's in all the classes. It's a lot of classes.
Yeah, it's a lot of overhead.
Yeah, it is. It also allows for more screw-up because, you know, I think it allows for more screw-up because if you have one centralized thing that is responsible for serializing and deserializing, if you just have an interface or whatever, that I actually don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, right, I actually feel like my solution is more vulnerable than that solution, but I just want to work in a more easy way for myself. Yeah. So I'm going to be selfish here. And I tell you what, if I run into problems when we record another one of these in the future, I will let you know. But for now, I'm just going to continue to be selfish and try to do things that are easy for me.
Yeah, and that is exactly what I want to keep doing, because again, it's a client project for me personally, so I just don't have the time to worry about that at the moment. You know, I'm working on
you got to help them make money on the business. Yeah, otherwise, exactly. your money's going to dry up.
Exactly.
And you're not going to have a budget, and you can't work on it anymore, because unfortunately, we live in a world where we have to pay for things.
That is, unfortunately. You know, I like to pay for things. You know, I like my cappuccinos.
I like to drink cappuccinos. I don't like to pay for them.
That's true. That's
so
true.
Let's see here. So what we've talked about so far is how we get from the web request into a command, into a handler. And then that's where the interactions with the domain come in. So we can call rename on the subject or whatever on your widgets. And then those will update their own state and then trigger and we can pull the events out of that and then store them away. And that's really the end of the cycle for a write.
I cannot think, like, the only other thing I can think of is, and this is like just talking a little bit about event listeners.
Yeah, that's a good point. So at some point in time, you're going to decide that when a new member registers, you want to send them an email.
Yeah.
And so the easiest way to do that, and I think quite elegant and beautiful and aesthetically pleasant. Yes, it's quite eloquent. Is to listen to that member was registered event and then trigger some behavior that actually does the email send.
Okay. You don't, by the way, need to use event sourcing to do this. You can also domain events.
Yes.
This is like literally the thing. This is literally the thing. You don't actually have to store your events. You can just do the same thing that we're doing. Have one class that stores the actual events and then afterwards get the events back and throw them on a dispatcher.
And we've done this on applications that have been CRUD applications and active record oriented and stuff like this. And it's worked fantastically.
Yeah.
I actually gave a talk about this at Laracon in New York City. And then I gave a better version of basically the same talk at PHP Serbia. So if you're interested in any of
both videos are on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
So we'll just link them in the...
that's a smart idea, man. Yeah, this is why I keep you around.
Exactly. It's more self-promotion 101. So event listeners.
So where do you even... Okay, so I have recently come to the conclusion that I don't want those event listeners in the same place of my application as the rest of my stuff.
Yeah.
So there's this whole Von Vernon IDDD book. You know, it's the red book of DDD. It's about a bunch of patterns. And I've been kind of a little bit frustrated with it, not because of the content isn't good. The content's fine. I feel like a lot of people read that book and get really obsessed with domain-driven design, but in a patterns approach only, in a design patterns approach only. And while I think that's absolutely fine and good work can come out of that, and work that can move the industry forward even, I'm really interested in kind of the object-oriented programming aspects of DDD, and the way that the language is utilized, right? Mm-hmm. And that to me is some of the things I'm mostly interested in. But I feel like the Red Book really says, hey, if you want to, you can separate all of this stuff, and here's these patterns for separation, blah blah blah. I actually, it does concern me a little bit that I really do feel like you can go like overboard with the architecture astronaut stuff, you know, really hyper architect stuff.
And never get anything done, basically.
Yeah, and so that's why I'm really into this idea of throwing a switch statement in some class or just creating this class or this interface behind which you can have all this garbage code that gets the job done. And you isolate that crap off into some corner. And then when and if the time comes, come and clean it up. I don't like the idea of creating these immaculate architectures. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the only reason I say that is because he's really into separating like the domain from the infrastructure layer, from the this, from the that, you know?
Basically everything.
And only now when I'm using CQRS pretty heavily am I actually moving some of that stuff out of these modules. So traditionally I would have put these...
event listeners?
Yeah, these event listeners right in the same modules. But now I'm feeling like they don't necessarily even belong in there. Now I feel like maybe those are, I could put those in some other place. And so I'm starting to move that stuff and my projectors and stuff like that out of those modules. So we'll talk more about that when we get to projectors.
Yeah.
But tell me, right now, and how do you feel about it? Where are your event listeners?
My event listeners are in the same namespace.
So they're in the modules.
So, exactly. They're in the modules, but they're in a separate namespace. So okay. Literally event listeners.
Okay.
So I've stored them all in there. For commands, by the way, I should go to my project right now and just verify that this is a thing because, you know, it's been a while.
Yeah.
I'm using the Laravel command bus.
Okay.
So that is like the self-handling command thing, just because, again, it's simple and
I
don't need to rewrite it. And like I've implemented a couple command buses right now. I've actually tested a couple, like, which is very simple. You can basically do it in 10 minutes at the moment, just because it's so stupidly simple. So I've written my own command bus a couple times, so I didn't want to rewrite that thing again. So I'm using the Laravel command bus and using the Laravel event dispatcher thing, and I'm using Eloquent right now. So my read models, listeners, and commands are all in my module right now, and under different namespaces.
Uh-huh.
Just because they're kind of like second class citizens, right?
Yeah.
Because
they're not the domain.
Exactly. They're not the domain, so they're not as important to me, so I just stuff them away, kind of. And already my modules are like the actual folder size is kind of big because I have like 20 something files or something in there, they're only a couple features. So as I start to make more features, this file will actually grow a lot.
Yeah.
At some point, like you might find another aggregate hiding in this one aggregate,
yep,
because, you know, it's just a lot of files, a lot of events. So you really have to think about that. And I currently already have this issue right now where I think I have another aggregate hidden inside my other my current aggregate. So I have to get back to the drawing board, talk to client, and talk to Nick, like what their thoughts are on this, because I might just be like, you know, imagining this or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just that, like, when my aggregate has a certain amount of events, and the events started to make like not really sense in there, then you might have a different aggregate in there as well. So
yeah, right now I'm lucky enough to have very, very small aggregates, a lot of small aggregates. So this might be just a result of the fact that I'm super greenfieldy and I'm still reveling in all of the positives with few of the negatives.
Are you actually fighting against a deadline, or?
I have a pressing deadline because it's important that this business starts operating, and the way that this is set up, I need this software to do the work. So I am shortcutting some things because I need to get this into operation.
Yeah.
But I know the fact that I'm heavily invested in this, and I've just put so much of my time and effort and energy into this over the past year. This is something that has to happen in this specific way, and I know that I'm ready to put a certain investment into this, and that's why I'm working so hard to make sure everything's tested and everything. And also, I have thought through the domain over a long period of time. So I'm kind of like the domain expert here, which is funny because I'm also a developer, which means that there's no discussions to be had. So the best I do is I talk to you guys about ideas and try to get a new perspective from you guys. And
So there's one more thing that I just wanted to just quickly say about event listeners.
Yeah.
Because event listeners currently in Laravel, they can be queued. One of the things that with events is sometimes it's kind of hard to troubleshoot something if something goes wrong. So what I in the beginning did is I literally had every event listener queued, but I kind of came back from that idea because, especially in the beginning, you know, like, you're new to event sourcing already, you're new to all of these things. And although you might know Laravel a lot, I've worked on several Laravel projects, I kind of know it intimately enough that I can, you know, do basically anything with it and know anything about it. I have these listeners all be in memory, except for like the email kind of thing. And, you know, all of these listeners that really take a lot of processing power and take a lot of time, and are not and are secondary, like emails. They're secondary mm-hmm. to me, you know, that they are not as important as some of the other things that I'm doing there. So you already kind of made the like the recap of the first
the
right side of this entire event sourcing story.
Yeah.
So reading, for me, I just immediately started using projectors. I didn't actually do the entire, like, yeah, it's possible for me to unread, get back all of the events, write them on the, or replay them on the aggregate, and then return that thing. I literally immediately just went projectors.
Really quick, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Does anybody ever say that you should just replay a bunch of events on the read side? Because for me?
Yeah, it's possible.
I don't know how you would do that. Because let's say I wanted to create a product listing. And how would I even know what aggregates are products? Because the only way I write to and read from the event store is by aggregate ID. I don't know what type it is.
Well, like the thing is that projectors or read models aren't really part of event sourcing. Like it's not a part of event sourcing at all. Actually, it's one of the things that helps event sourcing and makes it more, like, more scalable and more usable for you as well for like front end application. But it is not part of it. So like a lot of the pure event sourcing kind of people, like they really encourage you to first start, like from what I've heard is that they really encourage you to first start just getting back or like just replaying the events and then like return the aggregate or return whatever, right? And instead of using projections as like a first thing.
Yeah.
But I just didn't want to get like I just didn't want to use that at all because I needed to log in people. So for me personally is that if I had to replay all of the events of all of the user or member aggregates
until you find the one,
that's really expensive. So I just didn't want to get bothered by that at all. So I immediately started to use kind of projectors. They're not really projectors because at the moment, again, deadlines, things, you know, for me, it's like a simple listener. And so I have for each event, I have one listener, not maintainable at all. In the beginning, okay. I thought this was very maintainable because like the names were very descriptive. They're very easy to make, very easy to add and change and modify, you know, but it's just not clear enough. So for each modification to my database, to my projections, and a projection, by the way, is literally just a cache of the current state of the aggregate of some aggregate or some concept.
Yeah. So really quick, what I want to say is I've made a lot of apps with like RAD frameworks and stuff like this. So what I usually do if I want a product listing is something like this. I say, give me all the products that are in the products model that may match some criteria, right? Active or whatever. Then I just throw them into the template. In the template, I loop over them and display a partial that renders them in HTML. So that's how I consider a traditional way of doing this. Now what I have is I have an event listener that listens to all events. And every time a new product, or I'm going to use the product listing on an e-commerce site, for example. I'm going to use that as an example. For every product, product was added, let's just say event.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, when you find this event, do this SQL. And the SQL is insert into product listing and then the values from that event. And then every time I come to a product that was renamed event, mm-hmm. I'm going to say run this SQL. And the SQL is update product listing, set name equals to the new name, where the ID was the ID of the product.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, for a specific projection, which is simply a database table that has the information in the way that I want to display in the UI already. So this is a UI first concept. You know, I'm mapping the domain events to queries. And the way I'm doing it right now is whenever my designer says, okay, we have this view, this is what we need to be able to see here, I create a projector class that does more of that magic stuff.
Yeah.
Whenever you throw an event into it, it checks, is there a method in this projector that's the same name as the event? So if the event was subject was registered, I'll have a method called subject was registered. I don't do an apply prefix, I don't do any prefix, it's just subject was registered. And then it receives the domain event as an argument and then does some kind of SQL command. And if it doesn't know how to deal with that event, it does nothing. It just silently passes on.
Yeah.
Now, my projectors are also using the Laravel Query Builder, and they're also completely untestable. So, and by untestable, I only ever mean unit testing, like testing the unit. It's because what am I supposed to test? Am I supposed to test that it formed the query correctly? That's just ridiculous. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, no.
So really the test would be something like, look in the databases, the data formed correctly. Yeah. And I'm not going to do that for, that's not a unit test. If I want a test, it'll be an end-to-end test. It says, when I go to this page, given I have this product in the system, I should see this. And that's, to me, the test that will encompass that. So my projectors have no tests whatsoever, not even that they can be instantiated correctly, which I like to have those tests that they can be instantiated correctly, because then I can see if there's something wrong in that file, like if there's a semicolon in the wrong
place.
It's
a simple test, but it kind of helps a lot.
Yeah, it can tell you if some syntax error is going to break your application. So that's what I normally like to do. So what you're saying, if I understand correctly, is that you have like one file per projection. Per projector or one projector?
Per update, literally per update.
What's per update mean?
So let's say that my member renames his name or like to change his profile or whatever. It's literally...
So there's one class for that
process. Okay. And this is very tedious. It's not... It's,
so there's two things intersecting. There's the context of what you need from the UI, and then there's the domain event. So if you need a product listing, and the product listing is not only listening to product domain events,
but also
to comments being left on a product. It's listening to those so it can add that information in a super deserialized format.
Exactly.
So that when you loop over that to render it, it's not doing joins, it's not doing anything. It's just you have this one flattened projection.
And I actually had this discussion, not really a discussion, but more like a small talk about using joins and having this very denormalized way of working, right? Because with events, what I tend to say is that your events are like your general storage type thing. And from events, you can go literally anywhere.
Yeah.
Because your events have intent, so you can change information from there from that aspect. But also, like, it has all of this data, so you can change things from there, right? And you can combine events as well, so you can do a whole lot of things and then create all of these different kind of like views. So because that is literally what your projections are. They're like a representation of your views, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like you said, if a comment comes in, you want to up that comment count counter. Because
on the product listing.
On the product listing, on the product listing, because you want to show the correct amount of comments without doing a sum or whatever, right? So just because, why? Everything returns faster because you don't have to do that calculation, and it might be very fast. It might, especially in the beginning of your system or later as well, because MySQL is very fast. Mm-hmm. Sums are like nothing really, but still, it's all of these processing that you've done beforehand, and you don't have to worry about it later anymore. And it's also just very nice because it'll make your read models a lot simpler. You don't have to, like, your read models is literally just, or they could just be raw SQL that you're like select star from product listing, done.
Yeah.
You know, that could be it. You maybe might not want to do that. You may want to use some ORM or whatever to use for your read models.
Can you tell me, you mostly use relational databases for your projections at this point?
Yes.
Because, of course, you could project into Redis or Mongo or Memcache or a flat file or a video card buffer.
Elasticsearch, for my example, for instance.
Because are you using Elasticsearch?
Not at the moment, but... in the future, we will be using Elasticsearch because we will be needing search in there. And I have written searches just through MySQL queries, and that is awful. Like, for simple things, obviously, possible, because I want to have the fancy fuzzy search as well, right? And I want to have all the fancy dancy features. So that's why I'm just going to use Elasticsearch. And you know, this is very easy because you can listen to an event and then push it, like, have a projector for that Elasticsearch document, I believe it is, and then just update the document and you're done, and everything is done automatically. So
what's an example of a database table that's a projection that you have
now? Like, one of the more interesting ones is that, and the rest is very simple, like, I have widgets is one of the database tables. I have clients, and my client decided to name his members clients, so that is one of the things. So that's why I keep referring to clients.
Yeah.
And this is like one of the examples that I listened to my listened to my domain expert, and he said, well, I call them clients. So I was like, okay, let's just call them clients as well to remove that translation layer, right? But for logging in, for authentication, I have a specific table, just because I didn't want to have the password in my clients table, right? So I have a specific table for authentication, which literally has the ID, the email, and the password, and I believe that's it.
Yeah.
And I use that projection for my authentication.
Yeah, I do something that's basically identical. I have a projector that, for now, I'm calling it Designer Authentication Projector.
Yeah.
I don't really know how to name those exactly right now, so I'm just going with that. And because the purpose of the projection is that it's for authenticating designers. So a designer can come in and log into the system and then have access to a bunch of functionality that would be hazardous for anonymous users to have. So what ends up happening is I have a designer underscore authentication database table that has what you said, the ID, the email, and the ID of the designer, the email, and the password. So, and the password, of course, is a hashed bcrypt password. So what I can do is I can quit, I have an Active Record Eloquent model for designer authentication, and that's the name of the model.
Yeah.
And it has, it just says the table that to draw from is the designer authentication table. And so in my controller where I'm doing authentication, I just say, query this, where the email is equal to this. And then when I get that back, I say, does the hash password match this, using a typical hash check. And if both of those results are true, I just use the Laravel authentication system to authenticate them. And so I'm actually using this automated authentication system that ships out of the box working with Laravel. And I tell it to attach to this view model. Now, nothing in my regular of system knows anything about Laravel or Eloquent or anything else like that. But I can have this view model that just makes this ID of this person available on every request, and I can keep that in the web layer, in the world of the web. And obviously, when you're doing command line tools, you don't have that persistent user logged in, anything like that. So you can provide that to the system however you want to do it. But in reality, if you have command line access, you can probably just bypass the whole authentication thing because you're in the system, you know? But I mean, so it sounds like we were basically doing the exact same
thing. Yeah. That's actually pretty interesting, I gotta say. And like the sole decision for me was I actually got two decisions. Why not? Like I wanted to have two projections for the same aggregate in something, like for something. But so it was also like it was mostly the password thing, just because. With the read model for my clients, I didn't want to be able to, or I didn't want the possibility for me to accidentally pass in or like return a password, like the hash password of that member, right, of that client.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about because you're transmitting all this information back to your client application.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So that's why I didn't want to make that decision. I'm not using the Laravel authentication system. I'm using JW. T thingies, like the JSON web tokens, or I don't know how it's actually named, okay, or whatever, but it's JWT. So it's very simple. You just generate a token, and you can generate it basically on every server you have. It's not stored on the database. It's just stored locally on your client, and then you can just authenticate it with that thing.
Okay.
So yeah, that is how my projections. That's like the example projections that I have in there.
So I think it's interesting that in a typical traditional application, starting out the gate, your views tend to be really tied to one aggregate.
Yeah.
Like, so a product listing might just use the product model, for example.
Yeah.
But as time goes on, you want to end up tying in different types of information that could come from completely different contexts, completely different modules of your system.
Yeah, and even like third-party systems, that's very much possible as well, that you combine your information from third-party systems and the information from third-party systems and then create a projection from that. It might not be something like you want to do, but it's one of the possibilities that you have.
Is why I treat my projectors now and my projection
as a separate thing,
as a completely separate application. So they're in a different source They're in a different whole module that's just designed for projections that doesn't know anything about my modules being testing or designing or whatever my module, the feedback. You know, all the different contexts that users experience my system in, all the different contexts that we think of the system in, the projectors don't fit into them because they're not listening to the domain events from a single module. They're listening to whatever domain events are necessary to construct the user interface. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So as time goes on, I find myself moving these things out as I see that, you know, they don't belong anymore. And so it's really kind of given me a little bit of a new perspective, because without CQRS, without the fact that my writes and my reads are actually treated differently and thought of differently, like my writes have like this primary responsibility, which is to make sure I'm not writing anything that's invalid, that doesn't make sense. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then my reads have a completely different responsibility. They're just to fill the page with the necessary information. So therefore, both are simpler and they're completely separated in my system. And now what I can do is my business partner, he's extremely analytical. And I love this person and the way that they think. He'll want to know, okay, can we find out this information? And I can say, well, sure. And then like 5 minutes later, I have a projector design and a Laravel migration that creates the database table.
Yeah.
And then I haven't created a tool to do this, by the way. I can replay the events, all of the events that are in the entire event store back through my
you haven't done that
projector.
Yet.
I have not created a tool that will replay projections.
Me neither. That's like one of the things that I just keep coming back to this budgeting thing, because it is a thing.
That's the reality of the software. Exactly. Anybody listening to this has been a developer long enough to know how budgets work. Yeah.
So like again, but for me personally, what I just do is I run database backups every hour at the moment, just because I do not want to actually build that system right now, because because all of the other projection stuff in my system, it's not perfect yet or not good yet or like what I want it to be, really. So I do not want to bother with it. So I just run database updates every hour, and luckily S3 is very cheap. So
can I tell you a little secret I did? I implemented my event store. Instead of just storing the aggregate ID and the aggregate version as a composite primary key, which I do, I also pull out the name of the event and store it as a separate field in the data in event store. So in this way, what I will be able to do over time later, when I decide to make this abstraction happen, is I'll be able to let the projectors tell my administrative interface, basically, whatever I design, which will probably be command line oriented, because I like that and I work well with that. And, you know, I'm a Linux nerd. So I'll be able to say is, like, use the Laravel Artisan command line stuff and say, rebuild this projection and give it the name of the projection. Yeah. And it will be able to go and do that. And the projector itself will tell the system what events it uses by looking at the methods in the projector.
Yeah.
And so it'll then be able to query, say, give me all of the events of these type and order them by aggregate version.
Okay.
Is that relevant, aggregate version? I don't know. So far, I'm so used to ordering everything by aggregate version that I just jumped to that immediately. I haven't rethought this through. Anyway, so this is how I imagine this is going to work for me. That way, I can just say, rebuild this projection, and it will not pull every event, but only the related events. But at this point in time, that's not a problem. I have so few events that I could run them 100 times in the time that a normal page load can happen.
Yeah, it's just not a big deal. Literally in a fraction. Yeah.
So anyway, rambling on a little bit. I think to me, this whole projection thing is the killer feature.
Yeah.
The fact that I don't lose any data, because every single one of my state updates in my domain comes from an event, meaning that the events have the necessary data to update the state correctly, meaning that I have all the data to update the states in the event. That is beautiful to me, but then the way that I can come up with a new UI. So some designer says to me, all right, we have this product listing that works in this context, but I need a different product listing for this thing. And they're trying to get me to add new fields to the original product listing. Maybe I don't want to do that. Maybe I come up with a new product listing projection
and
give them
both.
Exactly what they want. And then I have one for one purpose and the other. Because I really believe that we have a tendency to look at the similarities between systems and then want to combine them and build a single monolithic solution. But when we have a monolithic solution, a solution that needs to serve every purpose, creating one-off deviations becomes a nightmare because you then have to become this abstraction, insane, mad scientist to say, okay, and this is to me what like symphony forms and stuff like that are. They're trying to do all these monolithic systems, but I want something like what I wrote with the serializer, which is one place where I have code that I can change for this one-off situation. And I love that one-off idea because to me, if you try to create a solution that can handle everything, it's going to be awful. I'd rather have hyper simple everything with maybe some redundancy here and there. But as long as the redundancy doesn't get too bad, it's okay. And if it does, then you have a well-defined problem that you can design a solution towards instead of like a general concept of the one ring to rule them all.
And like writing or actually making a separate version of that projection also allows you to, let's say you're actually updating the, like updating a new view, you're working on like a platform rewrite or whatever on your front end rewrite, you can serve like a certain dashboard or a certain pace to just a chunk of people, and have other people just still work normal in the old pace, right? And they'll work both at the same time and simultaneously, obviously, because you still have those both those projections,
and they're staying up to date.
Exactly, and they're updated at the exact same time. So,
and every time a domain event comes through that it doesn't know, it does nothing.
Yeah.
And every time a domain event that comes through that it does know, it does one simple, small, fast query.
It's very simple. It's actually very easy as well. And like one of the examples or benefits I give in my talk. Is that you can even we talked about this a while ago that you can project to an HTML page if you if just for the fun of it you're making like an event source CMS or whatever you're doing something right and you want to have static files to put in your server, you can literally regenerate your HTML file or just update your HTML file when an event comes in, change that file and just re-upload it to your server, right? And that is awesome to me, like, so having the intent from the user, actually knowing what has happened in the future, about what's happened in the past, that's kind of confusing, and having all of the data, having those projections, and having like the almost asynchronous updating of all of the third-party systems, all of the other systems. Right,
because the projections could be on 100 different servers.
Oh, yeah, you can do
whatever.
Like,
you could have one server that's entirely for reporting, for example.
You can project it to, like, different continents in the world or if you wanted to. And you can do whatever you want, really.
It's just a chunk of code that receives information, and then you trigger some change.
Yeah, so that is really why I love event sourcing. It's my current love.
So when it comes down to specifically the technical practicalities of implementing event sourcing, has there been something that we haven't talked about yet? Because I kind of feel like we kind of went through the writes and then we went through the reads. And
like the reads we've kind of like skimmed through because it's very simple.
There's
like,
really nothing to it. We talked about projectors and how they receive events and update a projection. Then we talked about how there's a read model that simply interacts with that projection. And so no longer do you have a products model. You have a product listing model. Some model that represents
something specific.
The user interface.
Yeah.
So when I'm querying it, I'm using the variable products because that tells me it's nice to work with.
What it is,
but the actual model is called like... index product list or product index or product list. I don't know what you would name it in this context because I would get this information from my designer, what they need, and I would call it that.
Exactly. And for me, like for what I'm going to do or what I'm thinking of doing is with this front-end application is at the top or like we want to have a little bit more information there.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking of just making a projection specifically for that. Like if something updates there, you just have one projection that is for that small tiny view. And so what I would have then is actually two projections for each page, right? So that is like an example of how you can have like almost a limited amount of projections for one page.
So the
possibilities are endless in my opinion.
So we probably covered all the technical aspects, I think.
I would think so,
so can I ask you a really hard question?
Okay,
well, first of all, how long do you think it took you to implement event sourcing on your application that it wouldn't, compared to how long it would have taken to do it in a more like active record-y type approach? Like how much extra time do you think you spent?
Like 60% extra time, I believe, because maybe even more,
yeah.
Just because I've gotten used to the active record way of doing, and you know, I'm just very fast at that.
Yeah. And it's just very, a very fast thing in the first place.
Exactly. It's very simple.
It's
like
rad.
You create a migration, create an Eloquent class or whatever, use Doctrine. I use Doctrine mostly now. Do this, do that, and boom. Like, you have a page up, you have this running, you have authentication running, you have everything running. So that is very simple, very powerful, but there were some of the recommendations, or like some of the requirements for this project, that why we chose for event sourcing.
Yeah.
So unless you don't have those requirements and you just want to use event sourcing, then do not use it for your project, because it'll slow you down.
Yeah.
It'll really slow you down. For me, if I want to add like events right now, it's very fast. I can do it in a couple minutes, and like I have all these different things, like I already talked about, like the serialization part, event factory and thingy. So it is like some work, but within a couple minutes, I have an event. I have an event persisted, and I have a command ready for me to call on the front end. So
right. It
is very simple right now for me, just because I've gotten used to it, and I'm making like shortcuts in PHP Storm for me to do that as well. So the work is done for me, kind of.
Yeah, I rethought the entire process of event sourcing from scratch, not looking at anybody else's code, because I wanted to learn the lessons my own way. But also, I'm the kind of person who wants to write their own code. So,
yeah.
No, I'm not. Yes, I'm using Laravel because it solves all the problems that I don't need to solve at all. But when it comes to this new technology and using these new things, I need to know how they're going to work so that I'm not banging my head against the wall trying to figure out what somebody else was thinking and learn, you know, like
yeah. If
I was using Broadway, for example. I'm not saying anything negative about Broadway. I'm simply expressing the way I approach learning new technologies, which is writing it myself.
Yeah.
With rethinking it all, implementing everything, mostly using TDD, otherwise spiking and then stabilizing and having full test coverage, I spent about 35 hours getting it all working, getting all thought through, getting some basic use cases coded up so that I would have those to work on as examples. Now it takes me much less time to implement changes. I'm not really doing any refactoring as far as that's concerned yet. No changes to existing systems, really. I know the domain that I'm targeting for this production launch.
Yeah.
And it's not going to change unless surprise, which could happen, but it's not likely to change. It'll start changing once the users get in and new features get requested and stuff like that.
And you get feedback.
And
yeah.
Then I will be able to give more information. But I could have done what I have now in maybe a day of just using Laravel the Laravel way, for example.
Yeah.
The full rapid application stack. But what I'm designing it gives me functionality that possibly can't possibly offer.
Yeah.
So I'm doing this on purpose because I want the benefits. But I've also seen that there is an additional cost. I mean, a serious one. One that people should be aware of and one that people should be concerned with. This is your job. You know, your job is not to just code stuff. Your job is to know, you know, as much as you can about when to use one approach and when to use another.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I feel our job is really, that's the secret of our
like
occupation. But I can see easily how you would event source one small component of your system and active record everything else.
Yeah.
And I think that may even be a best practice, you know, to me. If you need to know not the state something is in, but how it got to that state, if you want the kind of benefits that event sourcing and CQRS can provide, but don't need it for this kind of a user account, this kind of this, this kind of that. You just don't care about comments on your system.
Mm-hmm.
Who gives a crap?
Yeah.
Just bang that stuff out and who cares, right?
And yeah, that's how I feel as well. I've already found two parts in my system where it's currently event sourced. It actually shouldn't have been, but just because I was learning stuff and I didn't actually know where to draw that line, which
right.
is, so it actually might be good to event source everything in the beginning just because you don't, like, it's, you know, you don't know what
I
to do.
I think it depends on what your requirements are. Like,
yeah.
Do you have the budget? Are you doing a hobby project?
That
kind of thing.
That's the thing, yeah. And, like, we do have the possibility right now to listen to literally everything in the system. That's
yeah.
very powerful. We can listen to anything, combine everything that is happening right now. But
expect to pay like, you know, 20 grand.
Exactly. Yeah, that is more actually. Right. So yeah, it does have its costs.
Right. Okay. Well, we've gone quite long, but I think this was an interesting format. I hope some people find it interesting. I really hope to get some feedback on this, though, because normally I like to keep the podcast at maximum an hour because I find it otherwise very difficult to stay focused for myself.
You have to chunk it up more, probably.
Yeah, but I'm just going to launch this as one big piece and let people kind of deal with it themselves. But if you have opinions, if you have strong opinions of if things worked or didn't work, please let me know because I'm very interested in criticism. So
I guess we'll add links of everything we've talked about in the description.
So while I'm editing, I'll go through and add links to the file. And I think we're done.
Cool. Awesome.
All right. Well, thanks, man.
No problem.
Bloop.